Hey Chris, good to see you.
Hey Jeff, thanks for having me.
It's been a while. I think the last time we saw each other was GTM out in Nashville.
That's true. Yeah, we're on a rooftop. It's a nice day. There were some folks riding bulls, or I guess a bull, a mechanical bull, some with greater success than others.
Yeah, my pavilion envoy partner, Susan, was the one who encouraged me to jump on the bull. See how long I would ride that bad boy. So, by the way, are you going to GTM in New Orleans this year?
It's gonna be great. They told me, it was gonna be New Orleans recently, and I was pretty excited. We're definitely gonna have a couple of folks going back, another presence there this year, and we're actually having our company offsite next month in New Orleans too. So I'll be head there twice this year.
Very cool. Very cool. By the way, I'm joined by Chris Fetzer, the CEO and co-founder of Operatus. By the way, is it Fezza or Fetza?
It is Fezza. Although if you're in Italy, they pronounce it Fezza, and you just kind of roll with it because I guess that's how it's supposed to be pronounced.
Yeah, I took a year of Italian in undergrad, so that's probably where I got it from.
It's always fun.
By the way, let's go into some interests of yours. You told me that you were a DJ or a former DJ. Tell me about that.
Started in college. I, kind of like gone to, all the college events, and usually it was just kind of like, hey, whatever's on the top 40 like this semester is kind of like what you hear every place. And so I started to like dabble with, okay, how can we like mix this up a little bit? Got more into like electronic music, especially like when I studied abroad. And so it kind of started with like, how do we transition, a little bit of like electronic remixes of some of the pop stuff, and how do we mix in, hip hop with like classic rock, and just kind of like make something that's like a little bit more unique. So yeah, just kind of picked up DJing, started learning how to produce my own music too. Shortly after that, did that for a couple of years. So I got a small Spotify profile with a couple songs on it. And then yeah, DJed a number of events, nightclubs. I used to live in DC, so I did some there before I moved to New York, and yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Good way to spend your nights and weekends. Although I'm no longer in my 20s, so I don't really do it during the week anymore.
That's awesome. You know what we need to do is get a whole bunch of RevOps folks together and have a talent show.
We should. It would be fun.
So, by the way, I want to focus on some of the work that you've been doing, especially around companies trying to make better decisions. 2023 was a challenging year for several industries, particularly in SaaS. In 2024, I think some of the storm clouds hopefully are starting to clear, but I'm curious how companies are looking to make better decisions and where they're bringing folks like you in to help support them.
Yeah, I think that, part of the kind of the changing economic state, changing market, has definitely led to companies needing to take like a, another viewpoint on their metrics. When I like was looking at even like things like, CAC calculations, the fact that like companies are doing that on a gross basis, not calculating CAC on like a net margin basis after like costs, is like eye-opening because it's very different. You might be, operating on in the negative if you're calculating, your CAC on a gross basis. And so I think a lot of companies are re-looking at, where they're spending their money. Obviously sales and marketing can continue to be a big percentage, of overall, spend for a company, but like that I think is shrinking down. I think companies are also like, a lot of it is not just, oh, we want to sell more, let's get more quota out there, let's get more, sales headcount. Sometimes increasing your sales headcount is not going to increase how much you sell. And I think companies are kind of coming to terms with that a little bit more of like, hey, what's the sweet spot that we actually need to be in? What's a healthy attainment metric or attainment percentage by rep, that sort of thing. So that's been one thing that's really been good, and I think really been positive, because it kind of puts everyone in a realm of like, hey, what does it realistically look like to succeed? And yeah, maybe we can't be growing, 100% per year or 50% per year, but like, what's kind of that stealthy steady, healthy, profitable growth rate. And it's also really opened some, conversations on like, hey, do we have the right set of technologies that the team's using? Do we need to add another one or not? Do we need to talk, look at consolidation? Let's make sure that we're really optimizing for like the efficiencies of the team, the workflows of the team, and where it's not just a spend for potential ROI on each, additional thing that we're adding, but kind of, folks looking at everything holistically, which is great.
So I think there's generally a couple of things around, go-to-market operations that I focus on, which is, are you focusing on the business or in the business? And you need to do both. So when you're focusing on the business, it's the nature of the strategy in the market that you're going after and the strategy that you're employing and the series of capital allocations that you're making. And you can invest that cash in a couple of ways. You can bring in people, whether they're full-time or they're fractional. Vendors, contractors, and then internally, you can spend it on software, tooling, things like that. And some of the metrics that you mentioned, so for the folks who are listening, CAC is customer acquisition costs, and it's really the formula of total sales plus marketing expense divided by the number of new customers. So when you're tracking CAC, you can track it over a time series, quarter over quarter, and I teach this in my course, and that there's usually a lag effect. So for example, if your sales motion is 9 months, you may want to take the marketing and sales spend expense from, 3 quarters ago, 9 months, and correlate it to the number of new customers today. It's not a perfect metric because each cohort of customers comes in with a different time frame, but you can generalize what's happening for your CAC. And the interesting thing about CAC is you need to pay it back, right? So imagine investing in a business, a capital cash outlay, and then you have a trickle of cash coming in. Especially with SaaS revenue, it's the same amount of money every single month coming in the door, and you're slowly chipping away at how much you've spent, and you have to get to break even. And you mentioned something really important is not looking at gross, you need to look at net. Net is taking the revenue and applying the gross margin against it, because you also need to pay back the product and the service delivery, the COGS side, the cost of goods sold, and then you pay everything else to the business afterwards. I always find that there's one metric that CFOs and teams in finance put together, and I think RevOps could play a huge part of this, which is to take a look at a cohort of customers over time and look at when do they become cash contributive, positive contributions to the business. And if that number is, depends on each segment and size of the business, what's considered good or excellent. But if it's taking more than 3 years to make your money back, just everyone knows this, but a dollar 3 years from now is worth a heck of a lot less today, because you can take that dollar today, reinvest it, and 3 years from now it'd be much more than a dollar. So it's the same thing. You want to protect the value of money in terms of your investments. And I think it's super smart that you're actually able to take a look at those metrics. I'm curious from the data side of the house, CRM is where a lot of go-to-market teams store much of their data. Are you finding that companies are coming to you and they're saying, it's not all in Salesforce, it's sitting in different places. Help me tell a story. I'm not sure where to start.
Yeah, so I would say there's two things that we see kind of frequently, and one of the models is, it's a B2B company, kind of traditional sales process. A lot of times when they're thinking about, okay, we need to get a better handle on our metrics, and so we'll start by saying, okay, what are the things that you're measuring today? What are the things that we think you should be measuring? They might have some ideas about that. We'll contribute some ideas as well too. And then, what's blocking us from measuring those things that we want to? And a lot of times it comes down to like this, either the CRM or a set of tools, integrated to the CRM are not properly set up to track those things today. So we might start with some, foundational work of, is your data structured in the right way? Looking at kind of like the data architecture and flow of data, right? So from top of the funnel, maybe through marketing automation platform, into the CRM, maybe interacting with a sales engagement tool or something like that. Kind of very, very commonly, there's data that's flowing from multiple systems. So making sure that it's like complete, that it's accurate, that it contains the right types, the right statuses, and any kind of date stamping or time stamping things that we might need to kind of build up upon. So a lot of times it's really just kind of putting in that underlying structure to allow you to go from zero to one. We weren't able to measure this thing before, now we are. Great. We've gotten our baseline, and now we're going to look to actually improve those metrics over time. So we're going to try different things to improve a certain metric or metrics, and then we'll be able to see how it does kind of compare to the baseline. So I think that's a very common, sort of early stage company thing, or for a company that has, sort of not yet really fully invested in RevOps, is kind of being in that state. But it is very CRM focused, I would say, definitely, to start. Do you have a question?
Now, I'm just thinking about the different tools that are out there. One of the things that I often, work with folks when they're saying, you're in revenue operations, they're not necessarily familiar with it, and they somehow think it's a finance role because it has the word revenue in it. And so one of the gateways to working from go-to-market to finance, besides, the whole TAM SAM analysis during planning season, is the actual quote to cash process. And we talked about this offline before we started recording, but I'm curious, what kind of new trends are you seeing in the quote to cash? Or is it the same problem, but a whole set of new solutions to think through?
I think the problem is the same. I think there's a lot that's kind of, consistent. I do think that, companies are able to, whether it's a good or bad thing, a lot of companies are able to be successful without great standardization or great controls in their quote to cash process. And that's maybe they can, sell well, maybe they can fulfill the services well and deliver a product. That's great. But the reality is, like, there are a lot of companies who still need to, do some work to, try to standardize the structure in their, price book and product catalog, make sure that they've got kind of clear packaging or bundling of things they sell together, make sure they've got kind of clear attributes on there. And then that they have like a really good integrated process for, generating those quotes, generating those proposals, making sure the contracting goes through a process with the appropriate approvals. Hey, if someone's redlining and changing the payment terms, does finance need to sign off on that? They're the ones who are going to have to recognize revenue for this deal and know kind of what the impact is. And so really kind of thinking about it holistically and making it systematic so that a company can operate at scale and can do things like pass their audits appropriately and maintain the cash flow that they need to and get billing done in a reasonable amount of time and with a high accuracy. Because we've worked with companies that are their customers are kind of going into overage territory. They're not charging them that overage because they don't necessarily have the systems in place to, automatically recognize that and kind of and complete those, updates to their invoices. So I think it's really being able to create a system end to end that will allow you to, further automate and really just make sure it's kind of systematic what people can and can't do within the quote to cash process. That being said, it's not a, an easy thing. The technologies that are out there, there's been a lot of the same players kind of that there have been over the past few years, and then there's some great new entrants like New.io, who we've been working with as a partner for the past couple of months, that are making it easier to create an integrated kind of quoting and billing solution, something that can be stood up, pretty quickly, something that can be flexible to handle, a lot of scenarios. So yeah, excited to see, what they're doing and continue to work with folks like them more. I don't think that there's new problems to solve. I think there are more elegant ways maybe to solve some of the problems is kind of what we're getting to.
Yeah, I had James MacArthur on, Director of Business Development over at New, NUE, come on. We had a good chat about burnout. There's something about revenue operations folks wanting to work 100-hour weeks, months on end, and burning yourself out. But yeah, I agree. If you're a salesperson, working with your sales operations leader, one of the things that you want to avoid is selling off the secret menu, right? It's like, I didn't know that we could price that way. I didn't know we had that SKU. Well, we don't. I just needed to get the deal done. So I just sold whatever I could. And now I have a huge fight with customer success and product, but I sold the deal. It's not my problem anymore. You want to avoid those type of conflicts. Second thing is the invoicing and the billing, like you said on the back end, right? If it's in the contract, it's in this PDF stored away in some random folder, but then the accounts receivable has to send an invoice. And if they don't have a tool to send out the invoice, they don't know, they may not have the instruction set to invoice appropriately. And also, if the client pushes back on you, you want to be able to go back to the documentation and point that out. You also mentioned the contracting. CLMs, contract legal management solutions, have been out for a very long time. There's all sorts of flavors of them, from your heavy enterprise grade to your super lightweight solutions. You want to be able to have a couple of features that are going to be meaningful. For example, lawyers, for some reason, don't like to work out of Google Docs. They like to work out of Microsoft Word, and they'll comment and suggest within the Google DocX format. If you upload it to some of these newer tools, for some reason, the formatting gets all mucked up. It's all shifted out of place, and you have to recreate these docs. Also, esoteric terminology. I think there's some better discovery tools that are out there now, especially with large language models able to ingest large bodies of text and spit back the data that it needs. And so, for example, 120-day written clauses of cancellation, or 90 days, or an opt-in. The first 5 years of a 7-year contract are locked in, but upon the fifth year, you have the option to opt in. You're starting to sound a lot like baseball or basketball contracts at that point. And if people who are in the business from 7 years ago, 5 years ago, are no longer here, the people now are like, oh, wait, there's this clause in the contract that was written 5 years ago that we have to account for offline. So yeah, those sort of things are, I think, are very difficult to think through. But I'm glad there's a whole new set of solutions that will start moving the ball forward so that the world isn't so manual going forward.
Yeah, no, what you mentioned, I mean, it's one of the things we kind of most commonly run into is like we're doing some type of new implementation on a quote to cash technology. And it's not that we can't get an agreement with the company that we're working with on like, hey, what should the structure be going forward? It's all the stuff that's been done in the past, all right, that may be non-standard that we need to be able to be flexible and account for and make sure that that can kind of make it into the new world as well too. And that's usually where things start to get a little tricky and you got a plan for that.
Yeah, as a revenue operator, you walk in and you ask, why did people do it this way? But then 5, 7 years ago, put yourself in their shoes. The company was just starting out, just growing, and you needed to get a dollar in no matter what. 7 years down the road, that's a problem for another person. And guess what? You're that other person.
And that's totally okay. That's totally okay. Like look, we've got a 30-ish person team, full of RevOps people, right? And so my team internally is always like, oh, can't we do this, or can't we make this like better, or can't we like automate that? And like in some cases, I'm like, yes, absolutely, we should do that. In other cases, I'm like, that's just not really a high priority for us right now, right? We got some basic block and tackling stuff to do. Like, we can have a process, we can do some things that are a little bit manual. We've got one salesperson right now, right? So it's thinking about things from that perspective, like there is also a right time to address certain things. So I get that, right? Not every company is going to have that perfect data structure, that perfect process from the beginning. So
So I think
yeah.
the world of RevOps is about to radically change, even though it's just becoming introduced to a lot of different industries. But particularly in SaaS, my prediction is you're going to see leaner RevOps teams, which is incredible because it's already a super lean team. But the idea of creating copilots through new AI tools, they're going to rapidly develop over the next 12 to 18 months. I can tell you that I personally have benefited from creating new SQL queries. Things that I would have written in 4 or 5 hours are now taking me 20 minutes because I'm able to give a basic instruction set to AI. I'm curious, what are folks coming to you with in terms of how do I use AI? What is it? How can I make use of it? What are you advising some of these companies?
So I think a lot of companies are in that boat where they're trying to figure out exactly, what's the best use case for AI. How does the concept of using AI to get more efficiency or get more effectiveness either out of their internal RevOps team or out of the go-to-market teams, broader, whether it's, reducing marketing content or automating, some sales steps, that sort of thing. So the interesting thing is I think companies are going to take some time to actually catch up to like what are the right ways to use AI in our business. And I think at this point, because so much of it is so early, there's not necessarily like a lot of like tried and true, like, oh, you need to do X, use AI for that, put it on your roadmap, get it done this quarter. I do think that a lot of companies need to take an experimentation approach to using it, which I like to take an experimentation approach in general for a lot of things, because I think you need to like, get your test group, have your control group, see if you're actually, moving the needle in the metric that you want to be. But things that are, very commonly coming up are certainly around chatbots. That's a big one. And I think because it's like so obvious, right? Chatbots have been around for a long time, but if they can really kind of carry more of the conversation, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a worse customer experience. Like that customer can get answers potentially really quickly and in a natural language way. That's potentially very beneficial to them. And I think it's also helping to make sure that customer service agents, even sales folks are managing like an inbound chatbot on the website, for example, that they're able to focus on having those real one-to-one conversations, at the time that the person is like ready to engage and they've kind of gotten through the basic details type of thing. So that one's a big one. It's pretty frequent coming up. And then on the sales side, helping to automatically summarize information. So target account lists, like, hey, what's the news at these accounts? Or at these accounts, here are the different stakeholders we're trying to connect with, based on their, public filings, or last earnings call. What do we think that these people in these roles would find interesting or want to have a conversation about, right? And so kind of taking that research, which we can do that research today, but you have AI do it for you. It's going to save you a bunch of time and sort of teeing things up for you to still have a very kind of personal and relevant, outreach to those individuals.
I think those are fantastic use cases. I actually built a chatbot using a tool recently. I'll send you the link afterwards. I fed it the 2 years' worth of content that I've written in the RevOps Impact newsletter. And the quota for the bot is around 11 million characters or so. And my 2 years of writing represented 1.1 million. So it was only 10% of the quota. So now I'm looking at trying to train it on other data sources, so transcripts from the pod, different things. And I'm very curious to see how it'll perform. I'm seeing that people are interested in getting like surface level questions, and the bot does fairly okay. It does a good job of getting to that first layer of questions. And then if some folks are very clever at prompt engineering, so they can get a little bit more out of that second and third layer of questioning. But what I'm finding is folks want like the magic bullet. Can you help print out a model in Excel or CSV format to me? Folks are looking for like a hack, and it's like, okay, well, is this humanity that we're always trying to boil down things to a hack and then have this bot, just give us templates? I always think it's super interesting, but I do think that the tooling is going to get so good that it'll start writing queries, creating validation rules or flows in your Salesforce instance, that it's going to do a lot of the heavy lifting that was once done by an admin. And it's going to be able to do it that to a point where three admins can now shrink down to one, and it can still maintain a larger stack. It's almost like turning the admins today into Atlas, holding the world above their back. And I think that you're going to see that 3 or 4x Copilot lift out of the AI tools. Hey,
Yeah,
Chris, so by the
it's gonna be
way.
pretty cool. I mean, I think like to nerd out a little bit, like when I was first like learning Salesforce, I was a sales ops analyst, right? And I had gotten some admin access because I knew the right people to talk to. I'd run into things and like you're looking at, oh, like this is behind Apex class. Like, what does this do? I don't read Apex. And so I would know the right person to go and ask on the Salesforce team when I needed to, but like now you can have AI like read you the code and tell you what it does in kind of plain language. Like that's a big win. So I think the ability of people to get further kind of in a self-serve fashion, hey, you're not just Googling and getting a walkthrough on here's how to do something, you're actually able to kind of go a level beyond that. That's really cool.
I think I call it Super Clippy. I don't know if you remember Clippy from
Yeah.
Microsoft. See, but Clippy is just like so much more intelligent these days. But I do have a last question for you. What's a change or impact moment, either professionally or personally, that you're very proud of?
It might be like a little bit cheesy or a little bit too obvious, but I think the biggest one, that's had an impact for me, and I think had an impact for the clients we've worked with and for the Operatus team, is that we can really do a a fractional RevOps consulting service. And no more does like a company have to go out and look for that unicorn hire, right? If someone who can do analysis and planning and process and systems and compensation, right? We can kind of put together a combined team or a pod that can work with a company and play off the strengths of different individuals. But getting kind of all of those needs covered directly for a client of Operatus has been really cool. And I think it's been great to see that it does work and it is repeatable, and there's a way that we can be that sort of standalone RevOps function, or even integrate along with an existing RevOps team who's maybe they have a skills gap or a knowledge gap in one of those areas, or maybe they're just over capacity, they've got too many projects and we got to plug in and supplement. I think that's great. I would say the impact for the Operatus team is folks have been able to do that and to get exposed to potentially three or four different companies at a time, which just really increases the speed at which they can learn as well too. Exposure to leaders at those different companies, exposure to different business models, that type of thing. That was one of the things that really excited me about sort of the fractional consulting in the beginning, was the ability to bring my expertise, but also to kind of gain all of that knowledge with each engagement. And so I'd say it's been a very positive impact, I think, for our team. And if you talk to folks, they would say they love that aspect of it.
Good stuff. I'm curious how folks who how can folks connect with you? How can they learn more about you?
Connect with me on LinkedIn. My URL is just my last name, Feza. Yeah, shoot me a message. I'm down to chat. Join Wizards of Ops and catch me in a happy hour sometimes there. And yeah, I'll be at as you mentioned, the Pavilion DTM Summit. I'll be at Dreamforce, a couple other events this year. So happy to connect with folks either
Awesome.
Zoom or in person.
Awesome, Chris. Always good to catch up with you.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.